You're listening to Agriculture Today.
U.S. ethanol exports surged in August on the strength of record sales to Canada and the European Union, pushing total shipments to 188.8 million gallons. That's a 15% monthly increase and 24% higher than last year. The month's gains anchored by 74.4 million gallons moving into Canada and 47.6 million gallons routed through the Netherlands for use in the EU, with both markets combining for nearly two-thirds of total exports. And again, no foreign ethanol entering the U.S. during the period. Now, additional buyers did shift sharply. Colombia increased imports by 43% to 14.1 million gallons. India rebounded after months of minimal activity, and Mexico moved higher as the United Kingdom, Peru, and the Philippines eased back. Year-to-date ethanol exports, 1.42 billion gallons. That's tracking 16% ahead of last year. Producers are closing out 2025, facing deep financial losses and no approved disaster aid from Washington, even as projected income shortfalls exceed last year's. High input costs and weak commodity prices are squeezing margins across nearly every major crop. It leaves many farms relying on operating credit and off-farm income to bridge into 2026. Now, analysis from Dr. Bart Fisher at Texas A&M's Agriculture and Food Policy Center shows all major commodities tracked by USDA are projected to lose more than $100 per acre this year. And with rice losses roughly doubling last year's levels, soybeans, the lone crop with slightly better price prospects, and that's thanks to a new agreement with China, yet projected returns remain firmly negative. On the ground, growers wrestling with cash flow shortfalls, bigger operating loans, and pressure from rising land rents, as well as stubborn input costs. And after 8 years of ad hoc disaster aid, many producers wary of one-off checks, but see few alternatives in the current price environment. Well, farmland values across the 7th Federal Reserve District, based in Chicago, rose modestly in the third quarter, continuing the slow, steady trend that's carried through much of 2025. According to Ag Bankers surveyed on October 1st, land values up 3% from a year earlier, mirroring the previous quarter's gains. Illinois, Indiana, and Wisconsin posting annual increases, while Iowa saw a slight year-over-year decline. Quarter-to-quarter, district held flat, reflecting softer demand and more cautious purchasing behavior heading into winter. Credit conditions weakened further, revealing the financial pressure that many farm operations are facing. Repayment rates on non-real estate loans fell for the 8th consecutive quarter. Renewals and extensions increased again, and loan demand remained elevated as producers relied more heavily on operating credit. Funds available for lending also declined for the 10th straight quarter, and collateral requirements increased. Interest rates, they eased slightly, but remain above most producers' preferred levels. It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
She announced the opening of a sterile fly site and dispersal site in Tampico, essentially trying to give some responsiveness to this northern Mexico kind of push and really try to put sterile flies into the air so that we can control New World Screwworm.
Elliot Dennis is a University of Nebraska at Lincoln livestock economist, talks about the border with Mexico that's been closed since November of last year for New World Screwworm.
This is a larger issue when we think about kind of how we're actually controlling New World Screwworm. They're going to be releasing about 100 million sterile flies per week into Mexico by aerial operation. So essentially, now it provides a lot more coverage. So efforts are being made by USDA to kind of keep New World Screwworm out of the United States. We have inactive cases in Nuevo León, which is pretty close to the Texan border. And so this is a real issue that if comes into the United States could really impact the industry and lead to a much larger effort. So I'm glad that the USDA is really kind of taking a stance on that.
It's also been a tumultuous 30 days with information coming from the administration.
Yeah, this also came out this week that Attorney Bondi is going to be investigating the meatpacking industry. Now, this kind of comes on the heels of a past investigation that was really started in 2020 by President Trump, where he announced that he was going to look into the Big Four. Now, that time was a little bit different, right? If we think back to 2020 and why we had higher meat prices, we were dealing with kind of COVID at that time. That momentum was really carried, because of that, was carried into the new administration. President Biden at the time had a large effort to essentially have meat packing transparency. There were some good things that came out of kind of that continuation. When we think about new reports that came out, now we have the formula base price being reported. It was already being collected under USDA MPR, but because of the conversation we started having about base prices and negotiated base, they started to release a base price, formula base price, rather than just a formula net price. Some additional reports as far as cattle transparency. And when you think about it, we had the larger conversation about, you know, the cattle contract library, which was a report of collecting all the formulas and putting it out where producers can see how that base price is being set up. I think some of the timing of where this is coming on the back of an Argentina announcement that kind of decreased trade, higher consumer beef prices, and then kind of once again putting it on the back of the packers seems to be, you know, adding up from at least the political sequencing of how they would do that. But we're mainly, you know, what actually comes of this. You know, a month ago, we had two major packers settle outside of court with no fault admittance on settlements for price fixing allegations. So these things tend to be kind of come up. I think the important distinction here was it tends to come on the back of higher beef prices, which tends to be more of the administration kind of leaning into saying, hey, we're going to protect consumers. Whereas in the previous announcement from Trump in his first term was more about consumers or producers feeling like they weren't getting a fair shake and really kind of blaming the packers there. So different dynamics this time from when the investigation is. We'll see what ends up happening with this investigation, but certainly shows that this combined with Secretary Rollins' announcement on other measures like grazing and meat packer development and a lot of these other issues and her plan to kind of combat beef prices, is all this has been really kind of a interesting policy time for the beef industry, one that we haven't really seen in quite a while.
It's Agriculture Today.
This land, there's no more perfect place on earth. It provides more than the crop you grow or the herd you tend. It gives you purpose. And to help young, beginning, and small farmers fulfill their purpose, Capital Farm Credit is here for you. Our decades of experience providing advice, products, and opportunities can help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
At Wiley Implement and Spray Center, we are here to keep your Case IH tractors, planters, sprayers, and other implements in tip-top shape this season. Whether you need in-shop or in-field service, Wiley has the factory-trained technicians to keep your equipment running with genuine Case IH parts. Give us a call today or go to WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
What did we see in the survey? Again, overwhelmingly, lenders told us that farm incomes decreased relative to a year ago. Capital expenditures, that is purchases of equipment and buildings and other capital by farm operations, was also down quite a bit.
Talking about a third quarter ag credit survey, Joe Mann, Director, Regional Outreach, Minnesota Federal Reserve.
And this is a sort of a recent change from trend. Household spending was flat overall. I'll show you what these results look like in a minute. But that's noteworthy just because even over the last few years, as we've seen falling incomes and falling capital spending, the consumer spending by farm households has continued to stay pretty strong. So that's a change in the results of the survey. Did see, you know, a bit of positive news, continued decline in interest rates. Obviously, given the tighter cash picture, higher loan demand, and the rates of repayment on loans are down. I mentioned earlier that we're seeing continued growth in land values. We do ask these lenders about the price of an acre of land in their region, and we make a year-over-year comparison. Land values are up. Cash rents on an acre of land are down. And the outlook for the rest of this year is rather negative. And I do have some extra questions that I asked about farm labor availability that I'll get into toward the end. So what does this look like? You can see just about 80% of the lenders told us that on a year-over-year basis, farm incomes fell in their region. You can see the balance for household spending by farm households is just about even. 51% of them told us that there was no change, but a slightly larger share told us a decrease, which, as I mentioned, was a change in the trend that we've seen over the last few years. Household spending has held up pretty well. Pretty negative capital spending as well, despite lower interest rates and easier conditions financing capital purchases. Over the longer period, this goes all the way back just about to the inception of this survey in the mid-90s. You can see that boom in farm incomes that we had in that kind of early pandemic and post-pandemic couple of years. But really, we're on more than 2 years now, going on almost 3 years of declining farm incomes. So this is just the percentage of respondents over time who tell us that incomes increased or were unchanged over the last year. And you can see that boom that I mentioned ending kind of at the beginning of the 2010s, ended just, you know, went up until about 2014. That was actually really like a decade long boom. There were a couple little interruptions. Obviously, the global financial crisis was a hiccup. Farm economy tends to be on a slightly on a different cycle than the overall macro economy. But you can see there were really strong incomes from the early 2000s all the way up until about 2013, 2014. So that's a really strong, prolonged period of high incomes. And then we had kind of a prolonged slump interrupted by a little mini boomlet. And here we are. We actually did see a slight increase in the percentage of lenders telling us that incomes went up over the last year, but overwhelmingly people telling us incomes are down. And I will mention that a lot of the lenders who told us that there was an increase in incomes were lenders whose clients are more concentrated in livestock. Livestock prices have held, particularly cattle prices, are very strong. Those have held up better than crop prices. And so livestock producers and to some extent dairy producers are doing a little bit better, or quite a bit better in the case of cattle producers. So sort of like I said earlier, not surprisingly, given a tight income picture, pretty strong increase in loan demand, according to these lenders over the last quarter. 43% of them told us that loan demand increased on a year-over-year basis compared to just 17% that said loan demand went down. Repayments or rates of repayment are down quite a bit. Nearly half of them told us there was a decrease in the rate of repayment. And renewal activity along with that has gone up as well. So when an operating loan comes to the end of its term, you have the opportunity to roll it over. And that activity, that renewal season, you know, usually kind of happens earlier in the year. And that's up on a year-over-year basis.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
The 2025 Amarillo Farm and Ranch Show is coming December 2nd through 4th at the Amarillo Civic Center. See nearly 500 exhibitors featuring the latest tractors, technology, and equipment. Attend CEU sessions with agriculture experts, network with fellow producers, and find great deals on seeds, feed, and fencing. Don't miss it. Mark your calendars for the 2025 Amarillo Farm and Ranch Show, December 2nd through 4th at the Amarillo Civic Center.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Wait, did tariffs get dropped? And they're like, no, it was just this and this. I was like, reread that. And it's like, oh.
Josh Linville is a fertilizer specialist with StoneX.
And all of a sudden, yeah, now all of a sudden we've been trying to play catch up and figure it out. But yeah, the U.S. government came out and said, I'm paraphrasing, of course, but basically the government, the Trump administration said, we've heard the plea of the farmer. We've heard everybody yelling, screaming, crying about this. We are going to remove fertilizers from the tariffs. And this is for most of the majors when you're looking like urea and phosphate. We don't quite know yet on anhydrous, though that's not as big of a deal because we produce most of what we need here at home. But for the major ones that we need imports on, it's phosphate has been removed. Urea has been removed. This is a huge win for the farmer. This is a huge win for the buyer to get this thing back to a step closer to normal. Mm-hmm. I need to point out, I know we're going to talk a little bit about what the reaction has been and how long it's going to be, but it's mm-hmm. important to note, this is not the silver bullet. This still does not solve a lot of the global S&D problems that we have. We still have to maintain a price differential to the rest of the world. That does not mean we can move $300 a ton underneath the rest of the world. It's just not how the market is set up. But at this point, with as hard as a year as this has been and as hard as 2026 looks to be, we'll take whatever win we can get. I'm so tired of just nothing but negative stories. We finally have something positive to share. This is a great day.
But what does all of this mean for farmers?
I want to look at urea and I want to look at phosphate independently. When we look at urea, what this means is most of the world can now once again start coming in here freely. And people might think, oh, this thing's going to fall through the floor. Unfortunately, we only saw prices move. It was a less than a 10% correction. Prices were down, I'd say, $20 to $25 a ton. This was down in the Gulf, right? So that's what we saw there. It wasn't quite the massive move a lot of people had hoped for, but it was a little bit of a correction. Phosphate is where we think there's going to be a better correction. Obviously, phosphate has been a major, major supply problem. Our own production has been suffering from a lot of different problems. Imports have largely been cut off because of countervailing duties, because of tariffs, and the fear of sanctions. Well, now all of a sudden, we were able to sit there before and say, listen, our production's horrible. We've cut off all the major exporters. We're in trouble. Well, this is going to help reopen at least one. It's going to help reopen the supplies from Saudi Arabia. They no longer have a tariff. They were never part of the duties. They're not any part of the discussion for sanctions. Those tons can now start coming here freely. But again, a caveat, as long as our price makes sense and they want to send product here, we have to remember the global S&D is incredibly snug still. Chinese exports have largely gone away. We don't expect to really see them back until after this next spring season. And so globally, things are very, very tight. And if other people start buying, the sellers in Saudi Arabia have options. They can go different places around the world. They do not have to go to the U.S. if our price is not correct. So that said, when you start talking about a 10% tariff being removed on a product that's been trading in the $600-$700 range globally, mm-hmm. that's a decent step back. So,
yeah.
Like I said, wins on both sides, not as much as I think a lot of people would like to see, what I think personally we ought to see, but anything is good now. And as far as the timing, it's not going to be overnight. We all know prices are very quick to move higher. They are slow to move lower. And this is not just fertilizer. You see it in the lumber. You see it in anything that's a commodity. But if these prices can drop and if they can hold, you should start to see that price decline as we start moving into the winter time. As we start to move into January and February, the markets need to stay down. They need to keep pressure on them. And any single thing can push the thing up. Like we're going to talk about India here in a second with the urea tender, but it needs to stay there and it needs to continue to keep that pressure on the market.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
Let's talk about Cotton Research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Many of the headline news events are bearish, but fundamentally, in terms of just the quantity of head out there, here in the U.S., things are still structurally bullish.
Bob Maurer is with Manduca Trading in Chicago, says when it comes to looking at those cattle markets, there are both bullish but bearish factors, fundamentals and technicals.
A couple of the bearish things that the market apparently wanted to shrug off today would be removal of tariffs on imported beef. The Trump administration is in the process or has removed reciprocal tariffs on beef imports from New Zealand, Australia, and Argentina, although Brazil still faces a 40% tariff. So that is something that could weigh on the market at some point. We've had a seasonal, we've had a pretty decent decline over the last several weeks in terms of the cash. Last week, cash was down in the north and in the south. Five area weighted average was also lower. And then we also saw weaker beef cutout values last week, roughly down about $3 in the choice, and also select fell back a little bit too there. So both on the front end in terms of the cash sales and also the back end in terms of the wholesale prices, we've seen some weakness in price. And yet the market is up this week. So maybe it's starting to say enough is enough. We'll see how it plays out. Essentially, if you just look at the overall story, the bearish drivers are those tariff removals on foreign beef. You've got the weakening cash cattle prices. You got the falling box beef, like I mentioned. And then you've got some spec selling that had been pretty dominant, and also some technical breakdowns for some of the chartists out there. What's working towards the favor of any kind of stability would be the tight U.S. cattle supplies. Looks like they're going to continue into 2026. You got reduced beef production estimates, and you got slaughter levels that are still historically low. So I think those things are the drivers at the moment. They're offsetting some of that weakness that we had seen. We'll also keep an eye on the pork market. Even though the fat cattle and the feeder cattle had a pretty good move to the upside today, pork ended up a little bit lower, so it'll always be out there as a potential competing protein, so we need to keep an eye on it. Weak cash hog prices, seasonal pressure continue with that particular market with the hogs right now. Basically, dominating are the bearish fundamentals and technicals. You got the falling cash hog prices, growing slaughter levels, heavier weights, soft wholesale pork values, export demand is nothing notable, and then you've got negative technical momentum and some fund selling. So those are the major things that are helping to weigh on that market. So even though we saw a pretty good push to the upside in the beef market today, the pork market really wasn't able to circle around. So we'll see how things play out. We're going to keep an eye on those inputs. Like we mentioned earlier, pretty good moves on the upside for soybeans and wheat. Corn also had a bit of a move there, and those are indirectly or directly inputs for the livestock sector. So I think if they start to really hold on and push significantly higher, that might start weighing on some of these moves that we're seeing in the beef market and potentially add a little more fire to those who want to be on the bear side of the equation for hogs.
That's Bob Maurer with Manduca Trading in Chicago. This is Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This land, there's no more perfect place on earth. It provides more than the crop you grow or the herd you tend. It gives you purpose. And to help young, beginning, and small farmers fulfill their purpose, Capital Farm Credit is here for you. Our decades of experience providing advice, products, and opportunities can help you build a life on the land you love most. To learn more, visit CapitalFarmCredit.com. Capital Farm Credit. Together, we're better.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Yeah, there's been a lot that has transpired since last week, and we're very fortunate in the fact that Congress finally made amends and decided to vote on the continuing resolution that opened the government back up.
Cody Besson, CEO, Plains Cotton Growers.
Has been the longest overall shutdown in history. That has caused quite a bit of consternation in the countryside from, farm aid assistance between disaster related assistance or Title I programs that a lot of folks were very dependent upon in October from a timeliness standpoint and a regularity standpoint, in addition to those that were unfortunately furloughed as government employees were lacking, paychecks. And so trying to live from one segment or one time frame to another on a very limited scope, limited budget makes it very difficult. And so with the CR being passed, that revigorates Congress, opens everything back up, which is a positive thing. That's one of the key things about government is they are designed to govern versus not. And unfortunately now they're kind of back to that segment in that detail. There was some other things that came with that. One was what's called as a minibus package, of which the Ag Appropriations Bill was part of that, of the three appropriations bills. And basically what that does is that refunds programs like trying to make enhancements to cotton classing facilities, which has been an ongoing process for the last 3 to 4 years to make sure that those facilities continue to be upgraded accordingly and moving forward, as well as the other roundabout programs that are just of a basic necessity within the ag industry and within USDA programs. So, SNAP being turned back on and funded appropriately, the CCC, the Commodity Credit Corporation, being fully refunded, which we utilize very directly right now as a cotton industry for assistance in the Marketing Assistance Loan Program, which is very imperative right now, given where cotton prices are at today, for a producer or others that utilize the loan program can essentially put that cotton in the loan to have some cash flow purposes going into the end of the year, and then at some point redeem that cotton out of the loan and sell it on the open market. That it gives them some risk management opportunities in that vein, just given where commodity prices are at today. So very critical components moving forward. The other thing that it did is I know it's been teed up for a while, even before the shutdown, is just timeline of when the remaining portion of disaster-related funds for the 23 and 24 crop year would avail themselves. We've known for a while that the rule was submitted to the Office of Management and Budget, but they essentially couldn't do anything with it over the last 40-plus days because of the shutdown in order to implement the remaining portion of disaster-related funds. That has been set into motion. The definitive thing we can say about that, because it is a very complicated rule that we're still digesting, but we do know that office staff and others are being trained on it this week. And then hopefully the program will open itself up come the following week, starting November the 24th, and then run through for phase one and phase two combined April 30th of 2026. So a little bit of runway to let people learn more about the program, how it interacts with their role in their operations, because every operation is very different, but at least we can start to realize some of the gains on the remaining portion of the disaster program.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
This has been Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.